Many of you are, most of you probably are familiar with the teaching of the Buddha from the suttas around how dukkha, suffering, comes to be. That there is a causal or conditioned, let's call it conditioned, chain of events that is kind of a habitual way that we engage in the world. And without attention, this chain of conditions kind of tumbles forward, keeping us entwined in this web of suffering, this web of dukkha. And that chain, as most of you know, is called the chain of dependent origination, paticca-samuppada. And it's an important teaching in that it really points to the importance of conditions and cultivating conditions, and how when certain conditions are left to run on their own, suffering, dukkha, will result. And it's also important to recognize from that teaching that dukkha is not random. It doesn't just happen. It has conditions and causes that lead to its arising. And so this is one of the ways where this teaching of dependent origination, these 12 links of dependent origination, is a very familiar teaching. We talk about it a fair amount in these retreats and meditation topics, meditation talks, and Dharma talks. And yet this isn't the only form that this teaching of conditionality takes in the Buddhist teachings. There's a more, let's say, general form, a non-specific form that sometimes this teaching of conditioned arising or conditioned dependency is expressed as: when this is, that is. When this arises, that arises. When this isn't, that isn't. When this ceases, that ceases. And so that's the more general form of it, and in a way it is an expression of the conditioned nature of much of reality, much of how the world works. Not just our minds, but the conditioned nature of so much of life, existence, the way stars are formed, just the way things work. And the teachings in the canon also express or offer a different sequence of dependent origination. The usual form of dependent origination, where it expresses the how dukkha comes to be. Often there's a teaching associated with that in looking at the general expression of dependent origination. When this is, that is. When this arises, that arises. When this isn't, that isn't. When this ceases, that ceases. We can understand that if the certain conditions lead to dukkha, if those conditions aren't present, dukkha won't arise. And so this is one of the ways that the teaching of freedom or liberation is taught, that we look at letting go of the conditions that lead to dukkha. Many of you are familiar with, in this chain, one particular link, the link between the experience of whether something's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and the leap to craving, how we want things that are pleasant, how we want to get rid of things that are unpleasant. And that the chain of suffering just tumbles forward from that. And yet, if we meet feeling with mindfulness, we can short-circuit that movement to craving. And so the arising of mindfulness there leads to the condition of the non-arising of craving. The non-arising of craving means that the subsequent clinging doesn't arise, the subsequent becoming doesn't arise, the tumbling forward to dukkha doesn't happen. And so that's one way that this path to freedom is talked about. That as we learn how to let go of the conditions that lead to dukkha, we find more and more freedom. And yet, how do we let go? Letting go is, you know, it's not easy. And so, another teaching that uses the same form of conditioned arising begins to answer this question of how is it possible to let go? Are there conditions that support letting go? So this chain, in one particular teaching, in one particular text, the Buddha begins this text by saying, basically, I'm going to paraphrase here, freedom has conditions. Supporting conditions. And what are the conditions that support freedom? And he kind of walks his way backwards from what are the conditions that support freedom? Back through a chain of 12 links that leads us from dukkha to freedom. Often the chain of dependent origination is understood in some ways that we follow this conditioned arising of habitual pattern, and we at the end of that, you know, that chain, we are in a state of dukkha, and that state of dukkha often conditions the arising of more ignorance, more clinging, more craving, to get rid of the frustrations that are arising because ignorance is there. And so the chain of this alternative chain that basically the Buddha points to a set of conditions that support freedom starts from suffering. And basically, instead of cycling back into this causal chain that just leads to more and more suffering, takes us in another direction. That with the introduction of some wisdom, a teaching, a pointing towards the possibility of freedom, faith can arise. Faith in the possibility of freedom can arise. And so it's said that suffering not only conditions ignorance, but in certain conditions, suffering will condition faith. One taking us back through the cycle of repeated arising of dukkha, one leading us in a new direction. And so this new chain, this chain of what the commentaries call transcendent dependent origination, really points in a way to the fact that the same lawful process that perpetuates dukkha can also be at play to move us in a completely different direction. And so I'd like to read these links to you. I'm not going to even summarize them here. I'm just going to read them. And we'll talk about each of the links in the coming days. So, from suffering, there is the condition of suffering supports faith. Faith supports joy. Joy supports rapture. Rapture supports tranquility. Tranquility supports happiness. Happiness supports concentration. Concentration supports knowledge and vision of things as they are. Understanding things as they are. Understanding things as they are supports disenchantment. Disenchantment supports dispassion. Dispassion supports release, emancipation. And release supports the understanding that freedom has been reached. One of the aspects of this understanding of conditioned support in the sutta, this is called the Upanisa Sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha gives the analogy of rain running down the hills and filling up the gullies and creeks as it rains. And then as those fill, it further runs down and fills up the ponds. And as that fills, it further runs down and fills up the rivers and fills the ocean. That is a very natural consequence, that the arising of the original supporting conditions is a very, there's a natural unfolding from there. There's another text in the numerical discourses. It's a very similar list. It begins with a slightly different beginning. It has a slightly different beginning, but it offers a language that for this natural unfolding that I like. I'll just read a little tiny bit of this. The first two links in this list are different, but following from there, it's exactly the same list. So in this list, the Buddha begins with a virtuous person instead of someone who has gained faith. He begins with, "For a virtuous person, for one whose behavior is virtuous, no volition need be exerted. May non-regret arise in me. It is natural that non-regret arises in a virtuous person. For one without regret, no volition need be exerted. Let joy arise in me. It's natural that joy arises in one without regret. For one who is joyful, no volition need be exerted. May rapture arise in me. It is natural that rapture arises in one who is joyful." And on to the remaining links in this list of transcendent dependent origination. I think this doesn't mean that we don't have to do any work. But it does point to just how supportive it is to begin to touch into these qualities of faith, of ethical conduct, of joy, of delight, of rapture, and how those support the very natural deepening and unfolding of our path. In fact, I think as the path unfolds with this list of transcendent dependent origination, there are feedback loops between the links. In a simple way, for instance, we can look at how when we have a sense of confidence, of faith in the practice, how natural it is for joy or delight to arise, that we have that sense of trust and confidence. And with the arising of that delight, it's like that feeds back and re-supports or reinvigorates or deepens the faith. I think every pair of qualities here has this kind of reciprocal loop that the one supports the arising of the other. But the second also supports the deepening of the first. And then not only is there this reciprocity between two links of this chain, there are multiple feedback loops in this process. The first time you experience some sense of real understanding of, oh, this is why suffering is arising. This clinging. This is why suffering is arising right now. And then maybe watch or witness the clinging release and see the suffering release. As you begin to see those insights, get tastes of the way things are, get tastes of understanding, that cycles back and supports joy and supports faith and supports more concentration. And so I don't look at this chain as being a, like, you work really hard and you do the first one and then you get to do the next one. It's much more of a spiral deepening our understanding. A little bit of faith will support a little bit of delight and joy, which supports the mind willing to meet our experience a little more deeply, which cycles back and deepens the faith, which encourages more practice, more understanding. And so during this retreat, we'll be exploring these conditions that help us to let go, that help us to move towards freedom. It's a little bit of a paradox in a way, this chain, because it is a set of conditions arising that support freedom. But ultimately, it's supporting the release, the letting go. And so this chain, this development of these conditions, it's not about acquiring either states or experiences. It's supporting conditions that help us let go of needing anything to be any particular way. And so it is a little bit of a paradox. We are doing something, directing ourselves to support the certain states of mind, certain conditions of mind, and yet we have to let go even of those states. Let go of clinging. This set of conditions leading to freedom. In this set of conditions leading to freedom, there's no place for clinging to any of these conditions. And so we will explore this chain. This is our theme for this retreat, this theme of transcendent dependent origination. And now Gil will lead us in the refuges and precepts.
So one of the most important things I feel like I've come to understand these many years of Dharma practice is that when I practice, I am supported by the Dharma. That when I practice, whatever the practice might be and understood, and even sometimes if I'm a little bit misguided in my practice, the sincerity of engaging with the moment, with myself, with the truth, is supported, is met with, is by the Buddha, by the Dharma, and the Sangha. That these three refuges represent something that's larger than my efforts, that comes into play. And to me, it's been quite a powerful thing to learn to relax and appreciate and have faith in something which is not just about me and my efforts and my attainment, but to be held and supported by something that's so beautiful that I'm content to call the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. To be held by something that's kind of like if you wanted to hold water in your hands, you cup them together, and so you carry the water. I'm held by the practice and sincerity and of a large community of people who've been doing this for centuries. I'm held by the teachings and the practices and the almost lawful ways in which causes and conditions come into play, and to participate those with the truth, participate with the Dharma, supported by the Dharma. And I'm supported by the awakening of the Buddha. The first refuge out of the Buddha is the awakening of the Buddha, which occurs outside of time, in the awakened clarity of this moment. There's no distance between us and the Buddha, no distance between us and each other. We're here, in the awakened state, and relaxed, peaceful mind. So as we do this retreat, I encourage you to appreciate and value and have confidence in how you're held by the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. You're held by something that's bigger than yourself. You offer your sincerity to the practice, and the Dharma will respond. And it'll unfold as we go along here. So I invite you to join me in the salutation of the Buddha and the refuges, rather than doing a call and response the way we usually do, out of respect for all of you and the specialness of being together with so many of long-term practitioners, it feels right that we would chant this together. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Mudam saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Anicca vata sankara upadavayo dhammino ubhagitu aniruccanti tesam vipassamo sukho. And then we take up, dive into, embrace the five precepts. And we do it for our own sake, because it's not really possible to go into this practice and be on retreat in an effective way with ways that are not aligned with the precepts. And we do it because it's an amazing contribution gift to our society that a gathering of people, 40 people, have come together for a period of time, and they're going to live an ethical life, that we kind of are committed to not killing, not stealing, not engaging in sexual misconduct, committing ourselves to not lying, not taking alcohol and drugs to intoxicate ourselves. In a world where this is quite unusual, this is a great contribution. I'm very confident it has benefits that radiate out from here into the wider world. We support the world in what we do, and we're supported by it in what we do. And the precepts, the ethics, are really an integral part of it. It's also a way of taking care of ourselves as a community. And I think all of us here can really feel the power of practicing in Sangha, and that we're committed to caring for each other by abiding by these five precepts. I think my hope is it helps everyone sleep more deeply, to know that we're in a safe place here. And we usually say at this point in the precepts that that this is also a reminder of noble silence, that unless there's kind of functional necessary speech, that he has to keep it quiet, and to be very respectful of the space and situation of other people, to support them in their practice, and kind of give people a lot of space. Sometimes we say, don't make eye contact and things like that. I think it's generally a good idea to not make eye contact with people in retreat like this. But if you do make eye contact and you even smile, just enjoy it. So you can repeat after me, and we'll do this one in call and response, and we do it in two parts, and so you can repeat after me. For the sake of our training together, I vow not to kill. For the sake of our training together, I vow not to take what is not given. For the sake of our training together, I vow not to engage in sexual misconduct. For the sake of our training together, I vow not to lie. For the sake of our training together, I vow not to intoxicate myself. Thank you for that. And thank you for coming on this retreat and sharing yourself and your practice and with all of us. And it's meaningful for me personally to be with all of you and to share this. And I'm looking forward to our time and practice together. And for now, I hope that you all will get a good night's sleep. And by design, we end a little bit early in the evening, so you can go to bed early. However, if you're not that kind of person, the meditation hall is open. And you're welcome to sit as much as you'd like into the evening. Thank you.